I'm Francesca Millican-Slater, and welcome to Set 8 of Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night. I tell you tales that aren't always about the night, but carry a sense of the night, of being awake when no one else is, unrest when the sleep won't come. Frustrations, urges, losses, lovers, love, regrets, the things that keep us up. You can find all available episodes to download at iTunes, podcast, or where you usually get your podcasts. This is Yesterday's Papers. He had found a way to cheat time and so live a day extra than everyone else. He did not own a mobile phone. He did not own a TV, no computer or tablet. He'd only read the day before's newspapers picked up off benches or out of bins. He might collect them on the day that they were issued, but he would never read them on that day. He waited until the next, thereby staying a day behind everyone else, cheating time. Today, tonight, we are in a place just as the sun starts to rise, stay with me, astronomical dawn, those gazers still out there watching for the planets. We've had the darkest time of night, and now she, the sun, is moving upwards, little bits of light rising in the atmosphere. The day is coming. There is no stopping the inevitability of it breaking the day at some point. This episode is about time, the inevitable. From trying to trick it, outrun it, as in the micro story you've just heard, Yesterday's Papers. And I'll give a nod to Ralph McTell for that. It's a lyric from The Streets of London, a song I used to sing in assembly at junior school, written up in felt tip on an OHP while Mrs. Cambridge strummed a guitar along. She could only play that or come by R. Do you know what an OHP is? An overhead projector for acetate, stills. It's like a digital projector, but you change the slides by hand. We'll look at fondness for old technology and succumbing to the inevitable in a singular, longer-length story today. The Man in the Camera Shop. All his life, he had worked in still pictures, capturing moments, freezing time. He loved the power in his camera, the click and the stop and the wind on film. He loved the moments that he caught and the moments that he missed, the blurred action shots of a life passing. His hands were steady and quick, always at the ready for that magic capture, a baby's smile breaking, the dart of a bird. Although never professional, he was well revered in the world of amateur photography. There was not an enthusiast magazine he hadn't been published in, a competition he had not entered, and won. He could have been professional, of course, but he never enjoyed the commercial selling of his work. He liked to share his images for pleasure, not wealth. He never really liked the idea of the posed portrait, which was really where the money was at that time. The point about photography for him was capturing, ensnaring, sneaking up on a moment in time, not staging one. So, to make his money, he bought and sold cameras, offered repairs, developed photos, and the business did well back then. He loved to take a camera apart and clean out its insides, exposing its workings and mechanics as if dissecting a human brain. Except with a camera, it was clear what each component was for and where the problem really lay. Although he captured moments in instantaneous motion, he took pleasure in the length of developing the little piece of time that he had caught in still. These moments should be taken care of, processed by hand and eye and darkness. But since the digital revolution it was called, though he could see no reason to revolt against what worked simply and well, but since this revolution, people's interests waned in cameras with parts and actions and motions click and whir. It started in the asking if the cameras were laptop compatible with firewires and USBs, cheap, quick and instant pictures that they didn't want printed but locked inside laptops and memory sticks and mobile phones, colours altered and added cartoons of butterflies and comedy frames. Face swapping. No. Photography shouldn't be for everyone to capture on their phones and send across the world. It is an art. It is taking a moment of beauty and turning it into something that can be kept, stored physically, an object. Little by little, he had begun to notice the steadiness in his hands degenerating, his fingertips taking on imperceptible involuntary movements, the click of his button to capture not so quick, a dropped screw here and there, the components not working as they should. He developed a reputation of the cantankerous. School kids banging on the windows, taking pictures on their phones of the old-style cameras displayed on the shelves. He owned the shop outright, bought long ago when business was booming and prices were reasonable. He cannot remember the last time he broke even. He used his darkroom barely twice a month now. Just those little old ladies that always came to him, refusing to move forward as he did with the same holiday snaps from the same caravan on the same bit of land in Breen or Weston-super-Mare. Sometimes groups of youngsters in clothes too big or loose or bright or short would wander in exclamation of these things that were so retro. Wow! He tried to talk to them with passion through the actions of a film camera, the beauty of accidentally exposed film, but they just took pictures of themselves at arm's length in his shop with that face, the one they all pulled. He cut down his hours, open 3 days a week. He tried to hold his hand steady, his business steady. He stopped taking pictures of his own. He developed only other people's. Bi-weekly now, a smartly dressed man in a bright coloured tie would come in to check if he wasn't ready to sell. The money he could make could get himself a lovely little retirement property somewhere by the coast, Weston, Breen. Bright Tie could look into it for him. The prices were crazy and people, well, now were looking for a different offer. You know, round here, the next day development or film. Did he know there was a big supermarket down the road where you could plug in your phone, print out pictures in an instant? Coffee shops and cupcake bars replaced the family bakery and the hardware shop. Even Sam, who ran the corner shop, been here for 30 years, was thinking of taking a lucrative offer. Progress, he said. Progress. You can't stop it. So he, the camera shop man, started a nice little sideline in charging them kids a quid to have a picture taken with him or his stock. Originally, he'd put up a sign saying, "No pictures," but they didn't understand that language and would slyly still do it while pretending to fiddle with their phones. He'd tell them loudly he knew what they were doing, and they'd giggle into themselves. Now, apparently, he'd become a thing to do. He was on a list somewhere or part of some guided walk. In they'd come and have their picture taken for £1. It all counts. there was still the occasional repair or having to talk through how to load a film to some kid who'd bought a sham of a camera for 70 quid from a high street fashion store. Camera shop man couldn't load film himself. His hands' impromptu movements were getting out of hand. He could still laugh. One day, this girl, oversized glasses, unbrushed hair, she asked him if he didn't mind his picture being shared so much. Did he know that someone had set up a Twitter account on behalf of one of his cameras? That there was a Facebook, an Instagram feed, Snapchat dedicated to him? She showed him on her phone. And that'll be logged, see? Me looking you up, someone somewhere will know. And you have to be careful, you know. We all have to be careful now with the government and the NSA and the access they have to our pictures, our conversations, the things we do. I've stopped tweeting, only occasionally Instagramming. I want my privacy to remain my own. She thrusts a leaflet into his hand, writes online or something. You could look it up online. Do you like have internet access? Unbrushed hair cocked a pitied head. Of course I do. They do it in the library down the road. She swiped to check the times for him on her phone. They had cut back the hours. Well, he wasn't a complete Luddite. He had used the internet, had signed up to the course years before. In the library, with shaking one-fingered typing, he did his research and saw that she was right. Well, he'd read about these things in the paper, of course, and he wondered. He rebranded, changed, as Bright Tie had said, his offer. Progress, you can't stop it, but you can sell old ideas as new ones. He'd got himself through a recession before, he could start his own revolution. And the signs went up. Scared of what is captured online? Want your images to be kept safe and secure for your eyes only self-development? Buy a camera and film and receive a free lesson in self-development. Keep your pictures safe in our extra safe safety deposit boxes. For your eyes only, your privacy is our business. No duplicates, no scans, originals only. He advertised by hand leaflet and word of mouth, something secret from the internet. It worked. Film cameras flew off the shelves. Lessons in the darkroom became booked by the hour. He installed a bank of safety deposit boxes with special climatised air for the photographs. The air wasn't, but this kind of thing helped his offer. They could visit their pictures any time the shop was open. He had re-extended the hours. Show their friends their images safe from prying eyes of government or exes, bosses and rivals. There was small print, of course. They could pay extra to take the images off the shop site, but For Your Eyes Only would not be responsible for the sharing or duplicating of images after. Hen do's and stag do's, work parties. He even got some guy called Rafe to open an ethical coffee bar in the corner of the shop. And although his own career in picture-taking was over, he had a master key to all those safety deposit boxes. After hours, he'd shakily unlock them, go through marvelling in their quick, captured images, blurred frames, caught smiles, red eyes, half-closed lids, wonky faces, unbrushed, the wrong light, sometimes inside of pockets or shapes in rooms too dark, caught in an instant and developed over hours, safe in his shop. Of course, times would change, the fad would probably fade, but he'd made more money in the last few months than he had done in years. Maybe he would retire. Cottage by the sea, Breen, Weston-super-Mare. The quakes in his body were worsening, but these advances in technology, he'd seen it on TV, might mean he could take up the camera again with tripod and buttons. He could control with small movements the blink of an eye as his shutter. even if his body deteriorated at this pace, he might still once more be able to capture the moment. Thank you for listening to Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night. That was the inevitable. In that old adage, if you can't beat them, join them, and gives in a little to the dawning of the light. Next week, we look to hope as day breaks. If you have enjoyed this Stories to Tell, please let us know by rating, reviewing, tweeting, messaging us. You can visit storiestotellinthemiddleofthenight.com or tweet us at Middle Night Tale. We are originally releasing the episodes weekly over 9 weeks from May 2018, but if you're listening from the future, hello. All 9 sets of stories are available to download at iTunes Podcast or where you usually get your podcasts. They have been released in an order which references the next episode, but they don't have to be listened to in that order. They are made so that each set of stories stands on its own, although if you like them, I would listen to episode 9 last. Its theme is hope as morning breaks, and that's a good thing to listen to last. We have also released a selection of BSL video interpretations of these podcasts. These can be found at storiestotellinthemiddleofthenight.com. Stories to Tell started as a theatre show, born from ideas of people, friends, awake and up in pain or anxiety and not being able to sleep. These stories are made to be listened to when you are awake, a light still on or not, although I have been told that I have a voice that sends dogs to sleep, in a good way, but I think. It is written and voiced by me, Francesca Milliken-Slater. Sound design is by Ian Armstrong, with podcast support from Mark Stedman, produced by Pippa Frith, supported by Arts Council England. Copies of the original theatre text are published by Ink Concrete. You can buy or download at inkconcrete.com or on Amazon. Stories to Tell in the Middle of the Night, the theatre show, was originally commissioned by Birmingham Repertory Theatre and was supported by Arts Council England, China Plate and the Sir Barry Jackson Trust. It was produced by Pippa Frith. I'm Francesca Milliken-Slater and you can find out more about what I do at francescamillikenslater.co.uk. Ian is Ian with two I's at ianarmstrong.net. Pippa is at pippafrith.co.uk and Mark Stedman is at stedman.io. Listen out for a bonus episode where myself, Ian and Pippa will be in conversation about sound, the show, how it became a podcast, and if Ian has been recording cutting his toenails.